You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Spend your Saturdays with Life on the Water. Join Captain Brandon Simmons for fishing, diving, travel, and so much more.
You want to succeed. You want to fish. You want to be one of the greatest.
Oh, look at that thing, dude. Wow.
Oh. Let's see what kind of trouble we can get into today.
Don't miss Life on the Water every Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV. The destination for outdoor entertainment.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Bowhunter Chronicles podcast brought to you by Huntworth. Huntworth bringing you quality hunting clothing and packs at a price you deserve. Check them out at huntworthgear.com. Just coming off of the Total Archery Challenge weekend and very excited, a little after the fact, recording a podcast here with Greg Litzinger. He came, stayed with us, and we'll get into it on the podcast. But we just have too much fun at TAC to be bothered by work. So we did very little content. We did no podcasts. We went there and saw a lot of you. Had a great time. Stayed in a house with 11 guys. Had people come up, tons and tons of Patreons. Wish we could have shot with all of you. Wyatt, Blake, TJ, Larry, Chris. Would love to shoot with you all. Working on a way that we can do that better this year with the way that we our knock times were not in sync with our extracurricular activities, meaning we work hard and play hard, and shooting at seven, getting up, we just couldn't make it work other than Friday. Need to coordinate that better. Definitely want to do some more shooting with you guys. Wish we could have made it happen. But always fun. Cookout was fun. Thank you so much for, TJ for the brats. He made tons and tons and tons of brats. They were great. Andy brought a bunch of food, and it was just a good time. And really makes me look forward to, obviously, doing it again next year. But our Patreon hunt coming up. A lot of those guys. And for you guys that are Patreons that listen and aren't active in like the Marco Polo group and stuff, I think that's the best way to get this information is through there to find out, where we're going to be and what's happening. Like I say, this has become one of our favorite weekends, and looking forward to moving that into the Patreon hunt and then next year into the spring bear hunt. So looking forward to all of that. Got to see a bunch of the sponsors. So Latitude was there. Obviously, we had Greg with us. Jake Bush was in the Latitude Booth, you know, David Riley and Aaron Blysey from the fall. Those guys were there. Got to see Kevin Vistason. Austin from Genesis 3D Printing was there. Used that single arrow quiver that worked pretty well for me on the longer courses. Short courses wasn't necessarily necessary, but it was just a really, really great weekend. And just kind of sit down with Greg and recap that and talk about a little bit of the shooting that goes into it. So I think that that's something that, you know, people are intimidated by. And we talk about releases, hinges, the process of shooting, all of that stuff. I think you guys are going to take a bunch away from this. And then also, big shot target. So I didn't see any of their targets on the course, but in the expedition trailer, they did have one of their video screens. So instead of just shooting into a bunch of foam blocks or targets, they actually had the big shot video screen in their trailer, and that was really cool. It was elk that were moving and stuff like that, and then you shot, it registered the shot and showed you where you shot. And even though John hates Expedition, we got to meet Hunter and I believe Kyle from Expedition, and then Kayla and Tyson were there from the Dust Off Project. They were on the podcast, and got to shoot the Expedition bows. And that new Expedition, where I'm probably not going to spend $2,000 on it, super light and super smooth, full Cerakote bow, really cool. If you get a chance to shoot it, definitely do that. I was very, very impressed compared to some of their earlier model bows. So definitely something to check out there. And, you know, a lot of this stuff we couldn't do without sponsors, like I say, like Latitude, like Huntworth, Big Shot Targets, Jared from Vitalized Seed. We got to hang out with him at the cookout, and finally got a little bit of rain for our food plots. And I was wrong. This quarter doesn't end until July, so we'll be doing those giveaways here in a couple weeks. So there is still time if you want to get in, like I said, on the Marco Polo group, the Patreon hunt, any of that stuff. But giveaways from all of our amazing sponsors, like I say, Lucky Buck also. Down in Missouri, the Bucks and Ohio are all over that Lucky Buck. I'll have to get some of the pictures so I can post them up. But, you know, the Zinger Fletches, we talk about those on the podcast. Those arrows flew really well, really, really well. And the Fletchings, as always, I mean, I broke a couple arrows. We say on here, broke one of Greg's arrows, and you can just take the Fletchings right off, put them on another bear shaft, and you're on to another day. As far as events like TAC, I don't think that there's a better option for just quick, easy, and really, really great flight. So excited to, you know, use that equipment, stuff that we really enjoy using, as well as they do some amazing giveaways. So you can check that out on our Instagram. But this podcast is really fun, goes into some of the stuff. And if you were at TAC, if you saw us mobbing along with our 10 guys shooting, and you could see just how much fun we were having, and really enjoyed having Greg and having him on the podcast, and I know you guys are going to enjoy this one. So, as always, thanks for listening. All right, everybody, Adam back with another episode of the Bowhunter Chronicles podcast. I have a special guest, John Boersma, in the house today. And we've got Greg Litzinger, the bow hunting fiend. You know, we just spent 4 days with this guy, and we decided we needed to do this podcast when we got back home because
that's still fresh,
you know. But would you, Greg, you saw all those other guys like doing podcasts and doing work, and I felt like you were like, hey, take a picture of this, take a picture of this. Like, we got to do this for Latitude. We got to do this. And would you have rather, like, took time away from what we were doing to, like, work or do this?
Yeah, yes, it's a tough one. You know, he said, especially like doing a podcast in a crowded place like that, in those venues, it's tough. I know, like Aaron, we did one at ATA, and it's hard to concentrate because there's this something going on the whole time. So it's like you're in it, and it's like my mind and eyes are a wanderer. So it's like I just be like looking over here. Like it'd be hard to really, I think for me, give good solid answers in a place like that. You know, like back at the house might be a different story or a quieter place, but like right there, I mean, that booth was bumping all weekend. So it's like, it'd be hard for me to concentrate.
What do you think, John?
Oh yeah. We did one at like ATA and we did one at the Grand Rapids show. It's definitely, it's distracting, but, and it would have been really distracting back at the house too, like with Frank, yeah. You know, everyone ripping ass and, you know, dick jokes flying around crowns. So,
well, I look at it like this, like, and it, I talk about it with a lot of the guys that do podcasts or other guys that like are in the industry and like how I say, like, I suck at content, like, because we're doing this stuff anyways. Like, and I want to talk to you a little bit about that, like here going forward, but it's like, if you freaking live stream everything, like when John works on the bows, I think that's like somewhat like validation, like saying like, hey, like, it's not like we're just talking about it. Like when I say, oh, John does this and John does this, it's like, look, here he is. He got six bows he's setting up, you know, right now. But I have more fun like shooting bows and throwing darts at people than like taking pictures and doing stuff like that. It's like not for the gram.
You know, the moment, you know, if it's you're there, I guess if you need that, I guess you need that. But for me, like that's, I like to not have to go there and think of it like a job, you know, went there, you know, and just not enough time, I guess, in the day to do everything that you want to do. So shooting bows, you know, and then hanging out at the booth, that's a good mix, at least for me, you know.
Well, I look at it as like,
you can have a cameraman follow you around, you know, but then you got to pay somebody or somebody that's not going to shoot. Like Joe followed around, took a little bit of pictures and he was kind of gone. Like, but if he was shooting, it would just take 10 times longer.
Right. Yeah. And I think about it from like, why are we there? Like we started going there, like before we had a podcast, before like it was super huge, before it was like selling out every, you know, in 10 seconds. Yeah. And really enjoy doing it. And like, would I trade a day to just be like, all right, well, I'm just going to shoot video of Greg or somebody like that. Like, and these two guys can attest because they were there. It's not like I'm out there shooting fucking lights out, you know, or like I'm even like,
oh, we know. We know.
It's not like I trained for all of this. Like, I took long shots and all of that.
Aggressive shooter.
Yeah. Be aggressive.
Well, I felt like it was like somewhat of like a, it's like a different style of the Joel Turner, right? So you're at full draw and you got Greg cheering like a cheerleader trying to get you off your game, or Greg has like, I think your cousin, my brother-in-law Chris, is his like arch nemesis and or like stepbrother. Like, did we just become best friends? Like, when you had to come to like let down like three times in a row and then walk away and make someone else shoot because he was reciting the South Park episode you had in your head, it was like, but would you trade that for a cool video on Instagram or something?
No. Like those moments, you know, it's not scripted. So it's just as it, you know, it happens as it happens. Like there are moments like not everything, in my opinion, needs to be videoed or photography. Some moments are just better just living it and then having the memories, you know, and just kind of letting it be.
Yeah, just keeping it private.
Yeah, like not everything needs to be out there, you know, just enough to keep people entertained, you know. It'll be like, it'll be cool to have a cool, you know, like D-Rock followed the other guys around, you know, did that cool thing and it'd be nice to have that. But at the same time, it's, you know, whenever people get a camera around, or like, I can attest to, like, if I'm in a competition, I'm serious. Like, I'm there to win. Like, if someone's going to video me, like, I want it to look good. I'm not going to, you know, look like a jackass. So it's like, I think it would take the fun out of it, you know?
Right.
Like, I'm the same boat as you guys. I went there because it was fun. I get to shoot 100-yard targets in the woods with my friends. Hey, you're like, yeah, that's great. You know, a few pictures here and there. That's all I need personally.
Yeah. So,
if someone's willing to pay me a amount of money every month to do things like that, then yeah, but I'm not, you know, latitude takes take care of me, but not the point where I can quit my day job, you know, so.
So, like, one of the things you said there is, like, you can tell the difference between, like, someone who, like, actually shoots their bows or uses their equipment or whatever, and then the people that are just there, like, carrying around their stuff, or it's all new for them or whatever. That's something that's been, like, ruminating with me, like, since you said it, because I'm, like, looking around, like, looking at different people and, like, whatever, because, like, I would say, where would you put, like, the group that you were with? Because, like, again, your stepbrother pulled out his bow about a month ago. His D-loop was an inch high. His arrows, they all weighed around the same, and they shot okay. But he was out there in the least impressive equipment. But I think he was, like, pure, right?
Yeah. And he doesn't go there with expectations. He's there to have fun and enjoy the, you know, enjoy the weekend like that, that you can't, you know, there's something pretty cool about that. You know, he doesn't take it serious, you know, and it's a fun shoot. And I try to view it as a fun shoot. Like I said, get back to the filming thing. I said, someone's filming me, like, the whole thing, to me, it wouldn't be fun. It'd be like a job, or like business. And then it would take that element of, you know, goofing off, you know, doing funky shots through the trees, or just the jokes, you know, like, that'd be a horrible video, because it'd just be like, just beep, 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 beep. You know, it's been completely edited, you know, it'd be like a silent movie because you couldn't have use the audio.
Just have a voiceover the whole time, or music.
But so what are you talking about when you see someone who's like, you know, when you're saying, like, you tell the difference between people?
It's guys that shoot and take it serious. So you can just tell by their demeanor. You can tell by the way they shoot, you know. And then there's the guys that are, you know, everybody's there to see the posers. They're there for social media. They're there because it's a cool thing to do, you know. And then one thing I know is now I see a lot more older people there. You know, Michigan, I've seen quite a few. I mean, well, Frank's, you know, up there, but there are some guys there, I think they're older than Frank. And to me, that's pretty cool. These guys are still old, going there to have fun and shoot bows, which, you know, not everybody's going to shoot their bow year round. Not everybody's going to have a skill set that allows them, you know, like John, to shoot, you know, 114 yard, you know, with somewhat accuracy. You know, but those guys were just having fun in the moment. You know, and for me, like, I didn't really shoot past 65 until I was up there. And I could tell because my group's past 70 yards weren't the best, but it is what it is. You know, if I put time in, I would have shot as well as John did, you know.
I think
he was shooting Jake pretty good. Jake shot. She shot really well this year.
Yeah, Jake shot real good.
What was that? When you talk about old dude, like, it's funny because when we talk about stuff, like, and especially, like, whether you're the posers or you're the guy that takes it seriously, right? We would, like, look at their equipment. So what was that bow that old dude was shooting at the Bison on Sunday when we came back? Because he had a 10 pin sight.
Yeah, a 10 pin true glow. So basically, he just put a bunch of pins off a bunch of sights, put it on one small sight, and it was an Apex 7. He was shooting a trigger release, an old Fletch Hunter, I do believe it was, you know, and a little, like, 10-inch UB Stinger, and he's just... And he's shooting a blade rest, you know, like, the dude had some skills, you know, he drew on a blade, did the whole thing, and he was rifling off at 88 yards.
It was wild. Like, Greg's like, look at this old dude with the old bow. He's like, yeah. Look at the bison. He's like, he's got 2 in the 10 at 88 with this bow that's older than any of us.
Yeah, that's an old Apex 7, you know, single, small idler wheel, small single cam. But I mean, the dude was doing it, so it's not, you don't need $1,000, or $2,000 setup to shoot well, and anybody that shot field throughout the years, the equipment we have now, even a $300 bow now is like a $1,000 bow, or $800 bow, 15 years ago.
Right.
The equipment is phenomenal now versus what it was. But it's pretty neat seeing the stages, how it started and like where it is. Like I said, the only downfall is not everybody can get in there every year. Like it's tough, and that's the only terrible thing about that I find with that event now. It's just getting harder and harder for people to get in there. Like we had to wait for different times, different shoot times with your buddies. So you got to wait, and then we had 7 people at 7:30, and there's people that have 7 that just, that's the time slot they get, but they don't show up till like 9 or 10. So it's like somebody could have took that 7 a.m. spot, and let the ball rolling. Like there should be like some type of time limit. If you have 7, you got like an hour. I give you, if you don't show up, then you got to wait till 1, or something. You got to go shoot a different course. There's got to be some type of penalty for that. I think would kind of keep people honest from trying to get those early spots.
Right.
I do. This year we shot early. It was a little rough in the morning, but I think that was more a better choice than shooting 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
So from the shooting side of it, it's funny because I felt like the days that I was hungover, well, granted, let's just put this like little.
The days? You mean all weekend?
Well, but let's just put this in perspective, right? So we go up there to have a good time. We see people that we only see, a couple times a year, whatever. We have a lot of fun. We drink a bunch, carry on. But this year, because we shot at 7 and there's a balance, right? Between like spend an hour on the practice range and sleeping more than 3 hours. So like when I was getting up, like especially Saturday and definitely Sunday, like I was pretty shaky, like very, very shaky.
I never fired one arrow on the practice range.
No,
not one. Like walked up there. I'm like,
we all shot extremely well for being cold because I didn't do any warm ups either. Like we went from, walking right up, jumping on the shuttle and going.
Yeah. Well, I was at the point where, I wasn't even sure if I was going to be able to shoot. Like I haven't been able to draw my bow back. So that was like, I can't waste any freaking shots.
but like showing up there. And like I said, Saturday morning was like, we had a really nice Friday night and getting up, going there. And then we shot Sitka. So like, I don't know what it was, probably 70 yard downhill.
Is that a deer?
I think so. That first shot. And it was like
a ram?
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, it was a
really
ram.
Steep downhill, and it's 70, 80 yards, something like that. And I was having the shakes, not because of anything to do with shooting, but just because of like nutrition, like lack of sleep, hangover, all that. But I felt like I shot better. Because I really had to like settle my pin. Like I had to get in my own head and be like, okay, what was happening at the club? Like I had to get back into the back. Now the first day, like I was losing arrows shooting. Like, it was awful. Like I had a terrible shot.
So in the first tournament I ever placed in, I was hungover. Like I was like throwing up. It was like 95 degrees, super humid. And we're down in Maryland. I think it was Maryland, Virginia. It was just so god awful hot. And I remember just like puking, and this guy was there with his son. He's like, "You all right?" I was like, "I'm good, man." Just sweating it out, and I was just so worried about not, shit my pants or puking that I shot best I've ever shot in tournament because my brain was like, "Well, you got other things you need to worry about, like basic motor functioning." So the shooting part was all subconscious, and I was like, just going up, I'm like, "Yeah." I don't even care where the arrow hit. I was like, "Just don't throw up," because I'm like, there's like a woman, there's like a kid in my group. I'm like, I was like, just don't be the guy that shits himself on the course or throws up at the same time. You know, that's all I was afraid of. And like, I shot like a 301 or a 302, and I was like, wow. And like, man, shot really well. I was like, I just gotta get out of here, man. I was like, I just need to lay down. It's like, just, you know, August, that heat, or July is just unbearable, man. I'm like, but I was like, driving home, I was like, wow, maybe I should do this more often.
Have you ever been overwhelmed by the hundreds of food plot seed mixes out there? Well, you are not alone. And Vitalize Seed has developed a seed program that takes the guesswork out of food plotting. Vitalize Seed has two core mixes, the Nitro Boost and Carbon Load, to keep it simple. Nitro Boost is their spring-summer food plot mix, and Carbon Load is the fall plot mix, each having a diverse mix of over a dozen different seed types that are highly attractive to whitetail. Food plotting made simple, but it gets even better. Each mix provides necessary nutrients to the soil, making for better plots each season and saving you money by needing less Roundup and less fertilizer each season. The 1-2 system simplifies your food plots just how nature intended. Vitalize Seed, make biology work for you. Order now at vitalizeseed.com. And that's kind of like the way that I felt, because I was like, oh man, like, just keep it together. Like, and I shot that entire Sitka course with one arrow. I didn't lose an arrow, didn't break an arrow. Shot one of Greg's arrows.
Yeah, thanks.
And you talk about the weather, like, this year was the first year that we had any sort of rain, but the weather was like perfect. It was like fall weather. Like, mm-hmm.
Yeah, the mornings were nice and cool. You know, it did get pretty warm that
Friday. It got a little warm.
Right, but still, like, it wasn't like it was last year. Like, Friday, even walking the knock-on course in the afternoon, I didn't even sweat through a whole hat. Like, and normally I'm like a three hat, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's it. I had my long-sleeve merino shirt on, and, I mean, I wasn't even sweating in that thing, really. You know, and I had, like, a cut-off shirt like this on. So it was kind of nice. Like I said, it was good shooting weather, you know? Yeah. Especially like once out of the sun a little bit, like in the shade, that wind was blowing, like it was perfect.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I look at this event always as like a social event. And I go up there and I'm like, oh, yeah. This year I shot, like, I was shooting very, very well at the club, shooting at
hot.
boom. Dude, I watched the video. So, Eric, I don't know if he sent you that video of me shooting the moose. Like, if you watch that video, you could put it in slow motion and it would still be like, slow down, breathe. Like, yeah. I got back. I did like this, got settled in, and like the arrow was gone. And I was like, holy shit.
That's what we're saying.
Yeah.
Well, Sunday, we went to the practice course and like, I went back to shooting the hinge, and
after he adjusted it,
yeah.
So you like it better?
Yeah. Well,
it isn't.
It isn't that. It's a little hot, but it isn't. That isn't the issue. Is that? I think like mentally for me, I have a different like pace because him and Jake are like way too fast. Like just count, like get to the click and then count. And I've been thinking about that. I'm like, I think now what I need to do is like get to the click and say like, take a breath, like take a, cause Jake's like count. And I was like, click, like 1, 2, 3, bang. And he's like, this is still too fast. And I was like, I got the 3. Like,
yeah, I got the 3.
But like in my head, it was an eternity.
Yeah. Well, that's anxiety. You don't want to be in a shop too long, you know, and you're not settling in, so you're not actually making the best shot possible. You know, like rushing shots is never going to, you know, even look at from a hunting standpoint. It's the last thing you want to do, muscle memory. Come back full draw and let it rip. No, sit there. Long deep breath in and just breathe out. And just slight pull. Just let it go. And like if it breaks in 1 second or 3 seconds, just nice. Just stay in it. Aim. Like, you know, don't, you know, and I was watching you, like, there's a lot of this, like, you actually come off your face a little bit. Like, you want to try and keep that somewhat here. You know, you don't want this long where you're like, because you're changing, you know, your ups and downs in your left to right, because there's a lot of movement happening.
Right.
If you want to you want to manipulate it, like come down a little bit more maybe so your knuckles aren't as bad. But like here, you know, you just, there's a lot going on.
Yeah, it's just like you should – I feel like I try to make it so it's like you can barely see my hand moving. Like,
well, that's what's wild in those like slow motion videos of Greg, like, because you can watch his hand and like he's – he talks a good game, but his, you see his pinky and his thumb like all over, but it's in super slow motion. But it's like, and it's funny because Greg was using my hinge. He was like talking shit about it. And then he's like, let me shoot that thing. And then he's like, it took like 5 minutes for him to shoot one arrow. And it was like, he just ran a marathon or he sprinted. Like, he's like, that's too much, too much.
Yeah, I was out of breath. First shot, I'm like, you shoot with this? Holy smokes. And I was watching the video that you sent of that thing. Like, I was still shooting with, I think the release is so big, like, my hand couldn't relax all the way. Like, the pinky was, like, out here. And I know when I'm pulling in, like, my pinky just starts to curl in because it's under tension. And that's that transfer of pressure. That's when my release usually goes off. But that is so big, it's like, I could feel, like, the tension in the pinky just not letting go, maybe because it's just so big. Maybe it is too big, you know. I'd have to really fine tune it so I can get, you know, because I'd have to move the click probably a little bit colder so I can pull more with, you know, like even like my release, my hinge, I can pull back without my thumb on the trigger. Like I just pull back straight and even, you know, I'm comfortable doing that. But I mean, it is a comfortable hinge, you know. Jake's was, that thing was way too hot, man. That was, you grab it, it was going off. I'm like, oh my goodness. Like, that would scare me shooting something that sensitive.
So like, for you two guys, it's probably the best. Like, so I posted that video of you, and one of the guys commented on there, like, is a hinge something that I should look at? And for me, for both of you can eat a 12, right? Is like,
I
feel like my shooting has really improved since messing with that hinge. And especially, like I said, when I'm shooting at spots for sure, because I'm comfortable holding it, especially like at the club, we've got like those big blue targets with big white spots. And it's really easy to hold my pin on there, like even past the click to like, okay, settle it. And then, okay, make a good shot. Now, whatever happens with my hand, if it's moving and all that stuff. But as far as like breaking the shot, breaking with the pin on the spot, like it's helped me tremendously, more so than like a back tension. And so that's what I said, but I can't really like talk to like the mechanics or like why or how. So like the two of you, cause I think John, you had the same thing. Like once you went to the hinge, like you shot better groups, right?
Well, once I figured out the back tension, once I got used to the back tension, that silverback, like my scores went way up because I didn't have the ups and downs. Like for that, I was shooting the thumb button. And if I'm pulling and I start thinking about it instead of like pulling, and like, man, this thing isn't going to go off. This isn't, you know, and then bam, I, you know, punch the trigger. Well, then I just got used to shooting the silverback and I pretty much dedicated, like, look, I'm not even bringing the thumb button. This all I'm going to do is shoot it until my body is used to that. So I got so comfortable that I just pretty much knew when it was going to break. Every once in a while, I would feel like, but it definitely, that took more physical, like, because I'm squeezing and squeezing and pulling, you know, where I do the same thing with my hinge, but it's more like I get back and I'm not like just pulling hard. I get comfortable and I just start rotating. And that's what I'm saying in my head the whole time is like, rotate, rotate, rotate. Instead of like the squeeze, squeeze, squeeze. And it's like, it's less physical for me. Like I didn't, like at the end of the night, I wasn't as wore out, you know, when we were shooting our leagues, but I'm definitely, I feel like I'm more, I shoot the best with a hinge now.
Yeah, I mean, I hunt with the weight on Tucker, spike release, you know, like no moving parts. And that release, you know, the first couple of times, like, this is going to be dangerous. But, you know, I wanted some money shooting that hinge or shooting that spike release and kill a lot of deer with it. You know, I mean, I went a decade before I lost a buck. You know, I think I lost one deer in a decade, you know, from, because I've had deer come in, you know, with the hinge or a spike, you're in it. But I like mine kind of cold because it forced you to not make, you know, rush shots. And I've been full drawing bucks and does, and they walk out of the lane and it's like, well, that's better than a rush shot, you know, because I'm not going to hurry up quick, get it off. You know, like now, I accept my release a little bit hotter because I'm more trained and more disciplined. Like, all right, I can have a little hotter and I can, you know, at 15 yards, I can manipulate the release. It's going to be a kill shot. You know, but when I first got in the hinges, I mean, I lost deer because of it. I mean, because the shot wouldn't break. You know, I'm in it and I don't have, you know, I'm leaning over. I can't do any of this. And to me, that's better than, you know, punch a deer in the stomach, you know, or make it a bad shot. So it's like shooting hinge. It's, for me, it was like when I had my coach, you know, I bought a hinge. I bought a safety one. He's like, you don't want a safety one. Your brain's too active. I don't need you worrying about clicking and snapping. And so I bought I still got a old Scott Longhorn off Archery Talk. And I remember first, he set that thing so cold. And I'm pulling. He's like, go till it breaks. And it was like impossible for that thing to break. He goes, I want you to just feel what muscles are needed for back tension. Feel your rhomboids. I had like three shots that wouldn't break. Like my whole shoulder back blade here just had a big knot underneath. He goes, now you know what muscles I'm talking about, because 30 years old, I don't know what a rhomboid is. You know, what's a rhomboid? It's like a shape or something. I don't know. But like it hinges, I think if you dedicate it's not something I would advise someone picking up in August. This is going to change. Like John says, you got to dedicate a long length of time. And when I went to the hinge, I was going to hunt with a trigger, go back to my Scott. And I didn't, you know, I was not comfortable shooting it. Like three shots in with a trigger. I'm like this, any type of like a trigger, I'm good for five shots maybe, you know, and then it's like, oh, don't mind if I do, you know, even with a thumb, you know, like if I struggle with a hinge, I'll pull up the thumb for a couple shots. It just reinforces like just pulling back on it, you know, loading up the trigger and pulling back. And then I go right back to the hinge. It's just something I'm comfortable with now. Like, I don't know if I'd ever not hunt with a hinge. You know, it's just, I'm a better, more confident shooter shooting a hinge. Like even like windy conditions, like no clicks, just shooting, you know, you shoot in a windy day without a click. I mean, you don't know when that thing's going to go off sometimes, you know, and it's just like, just timing it. Okay, I'm in it any second now, you know, and sometimes it breaks, you know, good. Sometimes it breaks bad.
So like at the Total Archery Challenge, it's interesting, like, shooting with Greg and John, right? Because you guys both shoot really, really well. And I can go back to like, 3 years ago when John was like getting ready to throw his bow. And he was like, this is the worst I've ever shot. I hate this. And I don't feel like there was like a lot of like talk, like excuses. You're saying, I couldn't just get it to this, or it won't settle, or like whatever. But when Greg says that he has like an active mind, you know, like John's pretty like calm and cool and collected, and he's like, he just walks up there, takes routine. What's that?
Don't let his calm demeanor fool you. Inside, he's full of rage.
But Greg, on the other hand, like shooting with Greg is like, Greg's always like coaching, but like he'll get through a shot and he'll be like the bubble in the wind. And like, I couldn't get my fingers, like my fingers were moving. Like he'll have like a 2-page like diatribe of like what was going on, like in his head, like in the shot, like why. And it's not like he shot him in the nose or missed the target or something. So it's not like he's like making excuses saying like there's, I was like, man, if Greg, like he talks like on every shot, like he missed it by a mile. Like not like he's making excuses, but he's like, man, the bubble was all messed up and like all that. And you go up and it's like a millimeter out of the 12, or like it was like, you know, it's like almost in the 10, like wrong yardage, you know, like I'm going to shoot again for the right yards, like, you know. And it's just so wild because it's, I'm like, oh, what is going on in your head? Like, does you, when you're making a shot, like you heard all the 150,000 words he said, like,
I'm always thinking all about, I mean, like, I'll do that a little bit, but most of it's just an inner dialogue, like, you know, and I'll say it like, oh, just keep an eye on your bubble. Like, because I noticed that, like, some of the shots, man, like them off canter, like, if you don't look at your bubble, then all of a sudden you do look at it, like, holy shit, it's like all the way buried to the left.
Yeah.
You know, and then if most of the guys that aren't used to shooting that, you know, like, man, I shot him in the dick. Well, that was your bubble, most likely, because everyone, when they miss, we're like, if you notice, like, most of the misses were consistent to one side or the other.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, for me, like, I'm very, because I would shoot by myself a lot, you know, when I was training, you know, and I thought every practice session was like a training session. And I would talk myself through it and actually write stuff down, you know, as to why I thought the shot would do this or that. And then I'll go back to my coach and be like, this is what I was thinking at the time. And he would say, what to explain this to me. So whenever, like, I just, like, I guess it's like muscle memory, you know, habits. Because
you'd think with four of us spread out on a tiny island that the task of tagging a whitetail would not be a big thing. But as I've learned, no matter where I've been, whitetails can be damn tricky.
Pursuing wild game in wild places. Tune in to Hunt Stand Presents Saturdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
You're listening to the Waypoint Podcast Network, brought to you in part by Hunt Stand, the number one hunting and land management app.
In my mind, like, I can remember some of the shots where I'm like, all right, it's the bubble. I'm pulling too hard. I'm pulling off. You know, I was looking at the bubble and with my eyes now, especially on the far shots, like if I look at the bubble, the target just washes out. And so it's like, I need to get a scope of some sort, you know, because my eyes has been like just awful. You know, like after 70, it's like, okay, I can look at the pin or I can look at the target. I can't do both. You know, I don't have that depth perception anymore. So it's like, there's the bubble and I kind of go into the target. It's so like pulling right and it's like, it's the bubble. But if I get off the target, you know, by the time my eye refocuses on the bubble and the target, like I'm 8 breaths in and I'm all over the place, you know, like I've already lost a shot, you know, because of the timing issue, you know. I try to keep the same amount of breaths, like 5 breath maximum. You know, after that, I need to let down and try not to force it.
So overall, like talking about that, like what John was saying, how things were consistently going right or left. And I thought, like, as a group, we shot extremely well.
I think another thing too is like, it, like if a bad shot starts it, I think it kind of carries through sometimes. Like especially like if you ding one off a tree, like mm-hmm. you know, then everyone's like, oh man, he hit the tree. You know, that's in their head. It's like and then ting ting. You know, or and then, go ahead.
I know it's too. Like a lot of shots we thought were good. Like, because you're 7 yards away, you're like, oh man, we're in there. You get up there, you're like, none of us are even close to that thing. Right. 70 yards, like, we don't have the glass to see. Like, and you know, especially like the bears, you know, like the rising boar, these targets where the actual insert's different, like where you're aiming, you know, far forward or far back, depending on which way they're facing. But I mean, there's some shots that broke, like, we're all yay. I mean, like, look at that badger. I went on the ultra view. Was it 52 yards? We're like, oh, we're in it. None of us were even close. Like we were, you right. know, it's just, it's like, I couldn't even see that. I would need like a, you know, a 15 power spotting scope just to see that target.
Well, and the other thing too is like, so, you know, obviously you're the same way. Like it's, I don't have much experience with the 3D targets. Like I couldn't even tell you where the ins, like just, it's mainly from tack. Like we'll shoot our 3D club once in a while, and there's one up in
Hesperia
that I've shot like 3 times. But you know, like you start looking at it, it's like, well, fuck, I'm just going to shoot it like I'm going to kill this animal, you know, to the, so it's.
Looking at that, one of the things that was wild to me, like, because I was thinking about that badger target, right? So 52 yards, this badger, we're looking at it through the binoculars. You look at it down there, and the thing looks like a decent-sized target. It's not any bigger than this computer. Like, honestly, it was super tiny, like maybe 18 inches. And we're shooting at this thing at 52 yards, and we were all, whether we were in the dot or not, we were in a 3-inch group.
Yeah.
All of us. And that to me is like the most impressive, you know, because we're, like I said, there, everybody practiced a little bit going into it, but I don't think anybody was like shooting, you know, since the winter time at 100 yard distances or whatever. And with what experience levels or whatever preparation we went up there with, especially like the guys who it was their first years. I was really impressed. Like Jack, right? In his own head, like lose an arrow, like, oh my God, the day's over. Like, ah, and like, dude, it's just money. We can buy more arrows, like whatever. And he's like, oh yeah, well, I'm going to shoot an 11 on this mosquito at 48 yards. Like,
yeah.
Like what?
He shot really well, you know, surprisingly. And even like Chris, you know, it's like, all right, like significant jump from where he was last year, you know, like, and that's just maybe if you're comfortable shooting, you know, with the group and comfortable shooting. You've already been to that event once, you know, the novelty, excitement maybe wore off, you know, the nerves are somewhat gone. But, yeah, it's cool to see like people's progressions, you know, like first couple of tacks I went to, my buddies went, they weren't necessarily good, but they got better, you know, as the time went on, you know. So you shoot them, you get better usually. Well, if you want to get better, you'll get better.
Well, I think too, like once you get over the fact that like it isn't first, like nobody cares if you shoot them in the, like one of those was like completely missed the target, but got like the paw behind the bear, you know? And it's yeah. Like that arrow's right there. Like we're good. Like scoop it up. And we're shooting a group of 10, like, which is like probably not what you should do. And we're shooting it at like three times the speed of like a normal group.
Oh yeah.
Being courteous and having fun. And it wasn't like we were unsafe or reckless, but it was just like, we know that it doesn't matter if we shoot from the cone or if, you know, some guys want to weave one through the trees over here and it's really easy shot over here. So you might as well try that, you know,
short people.
But one of the things when we talk about, equipment, right? It was very interesting talking with Greg, like more, because this is like probably the fourth time that we've spent like a lot of time together. And you're like, I'm cheap. I'm just cheap. Like, I don't, you know, I'm not going to spend, like, this works just fine. And I asked him, like, is there anything that you would spend, like, that you got to have, like, the highest end, anything? And your answer was?
Glass.
Well, you said no. You said if I had money to spend, it would be on glass.
Yeah. Binos. I got $2,000 to spend on a bow. I'd be better off as a shooter and hunter with, you know, a $2,000 pair of binoculars. That's going to allow you to see things that, especially I'm getting older now, like I said, my vision is just trash. You know, like right now I got the progressives on. It's like the screen's kind of blurry, but like I can see up close and it's like, it's just weird looking through them because I usually don't use them anything except for like reading.
But so that being said, when you're going to tack or like maybe it's your normal like 3D setup, but like what are your arrows? Because I was thinking about that, like especially for my brother-in-law Chris would be to like if we built him like a set of arrows that was set up for his draw length and that were probably a little lighter. Like, he could probably do some damage. Like, he could shoot
pretty well, I think.
Like for me, like I use the deer crossing arrows. I mean, most of the tacks I've done, I've bought a dozen deer crossing because, you know, they're somewhat durable. You know, I shot one through a tree, you know, like, but they're cost effective. If you lose three or four, even six, not that big of a deal. You know, I went to one tack. I had the Black Eagle, the Spartans, and I had the brass insert and stuff like that. Like, I lost so much in the tall grass. Like, it was like, it hurt me every time I lost one because I'm like, there's like $25. And it's like, I lost like probably 8 or 10. So I'm looking, I'm like, that's like $200. So then it's like, and then you get in like safe mode. It's like, all right, I'm not going to risk so many shots. You know, it's like, I don't want to lose any arrows. Like, I'm here for 3 days. I'm running short on arrows. It's not like I can go to the booth there and say, hey, give me these arrows this length with these brass inserts and these fletchings. You know, like, they're not going to have them. So for me, I just always went cheap with the deer crossing. And I mean, if I do my part, they do their part, you know?
And so what do you hunt with for arrows?
I have this bow here. There's deer crossing on this one. I have day sixes on another. I mean, I got way too many damn arrows here. You know, I can literally just pick up a box over here. I got two giant arrow boxes with like 8 or 9 arrows ready to go. I got 350 spine, 400, 300s. You know, I got big shafts, little shafts. But for me, I'm not a fan of outserts anymore. Micro diameters, like, it's got to be internal. I think for me, like a 204 for hunting, you know, and like a tack event or hunting, I think a 204, in my opinion, is probably the best arrow just because you can get that insert factor, you know, a nice beefy insert slash, you know, somewhat of an outsert on it, you know. But my local club's all bag targets, you know, field. So it's like, can't shoot my hunting bow there in the summertime because, well, you're not getting those inserts or outserts out of that.
No, whatever that ain't, you know, that ain't worth a shit.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, and then, I mean, I got the day sixes are probably some of the most toughest arrows I've ever shot. I think I broke one on a deer, you know, and I've lost a few, but just the outsert thing, man, it's a drag when the outsert comes out, you know, or it gets stuck somewhere and you can't get it out. And then like the glue, you know, that black super glue, like you ain't getting none of that. You can't salvage anything on that arrow. It's just like, well, all right, well, this is arrow. It's just going to be a paperweight in the future, you know?
So you said you shot an arrow through a tree. Let's unpack that a little bit for the listener. Cause that was freaking hilarious. Yeah.
Oh, the, what was it? The Boneyard shot, right? Right.
Yeah.
After, yeah. You know, so that's uphill, was it 58 or 52 yards?
It was like, I think we were getting a little bit. I think I shot it for 54 and it should have been like 56 or something.
Yeah. We're all shooting low on it. Yeah. You know? And like, so I shot, I don't know, probably 5 or 6 arrows. And I'm grouping them well, just low. And I was like, I just want one in there. And you're shooting through, what, 6-inch window, maybe?
Yeah.
We had an 8-inch window max at that distance, you know, and most of the vitals were, half the vitals were covered, so you got just the outer, you know, the right side of that scoring system, the insert there. So the last shot I shot, and, you know, and it just, I pulled it to the left a little bit, and there was a tree that was all strewn with arrows, and I thought the arrow was toast. You know, I was like, well, first arrow broke, you know, all weekend, I'm happy with that. And we go up there. The arrow was fine. You know, Adam walks up and the zinger fletcher's in the tree. And he's like, oh, here's a zinger. I'm like, oh, well, at least I got something. And then behind the tree, you know, in the dirt there was my arrow. Still intact, not cracked, not broken. So I was like, oh, and then John looks back and you can see my knot stuck in the tree. So it was pretty cool, you know. Even though I hit a tree, I still got the arrow.
Jake center punched that tree too, and his was still in it, and ended up. I pulled it out. I pulled it out. It had a little bit of freaking bark on it, but his was good too.
And he lost a few hours shooting in the dirt.
Yeah,
those rampages. Yeah, that one was that wolf. We shot across that ravine there. He was like two in the dirt, and both of them broke.
Yeah.
I was like, he broke up some stuff last year too. I was like, I couldn't shoot those arrows again personally. You know, I don't want to, if I hit dirt, I don't want the arrows to splinter or break.
Yeah, well, he's also, I mean, he's shooting like me, like 74 pounds on a lighter arrow. And,
yeah.
And smoked a couple rocks for sure. Like, they don't just ding off those going, you know, 300 feet per second.
I know, like, I mean, my bell is 54 pounds, you know, and my arrows are 340. I think they might be weighing, like, they're super light. You know, they got, it's good, you know, shooting light pounds, light arrows. If you do hit something, usually it's most things, you know, after 60 yards, almost every arrow is salvageable, you know? Mm-hmm. There's just nothing there. There's no velocity. It's like, bing, bing,
you know? Well, there was that one shot on knock-on, and Frank, he cranked his bow up, but it still probably was somewhere around 60 pounds. And it was a 100-yard shot or something. And he shoots it, and it just smoked this tree. I mean, it was just stuck in the tree. Run up there, start collecting arrows, and I'm like, oh, this one's junk. And I pulled it out, and it was only in, like, maybe, like, a half an inch. It was just like, doink. Yeah. It's like, well, it's one thing.
The perks of using lightweight and light arrows, you know, there's some pluses and minuses to it. But I think next year I'm actually going to – I got a couple bows. I don't even need to buy a bow. I got a bow in the basement that go up 60 pounds. Like, I might bring that one, you know, because I like to shoot, you know, half a dozen arrows sometimes per target if I got the time, because it's just – I don't get that around here. So it's like I'm going to just let it eat, you know. So 60 pounds, 400 grain arrow, I think it'd make shooting over 100 a plus, you know, because my sight bubble – 115 yards. I need to use my sight bubble. So I can't even see the target. You know, for me to shoot 110 yards with my bow, it's not exactly fun. You get that distance. You're just hoping you hit the target and not lose your arrow.
Right.
So honestly, I've been shooting forever and I get them for free and you got some for free. When we were in PA, I was like, you got to talk to the Zinger guys. Like, it's perfect. Like, the Zinger with the Zinger, right? Like, you're like, you're just like John. You're like, you know, fuck those things. Like, I don't know. Like, I've seen the fobs before. Like, these things are dumb, right?
Yeah.
But you shot them up there, and, like, you were shooting them at home. So, what, like, what's your take on them, like, for real?
They fly extremely well. A lot better than I thought they're going to fly. They don't drift as much as I thought because it's got a pretty high profile, but I think it's such a small profile. I don't think you get the wind drift like you would on a longer fletching. I think there's just less drag from the side. So I'm pretty impressed. I mean, I can't say I like fletching arrows anymore because of time. It's so time consuming to do a dozen arrows, you know, and I'm pretty particular and anal when it comes to that stuff. So I'm trying to do it like after the kids go to bed or what a house full of, you know, chaos. It can be tough to get a good fletch out on arrows. And I scraped off right before I left, scraped off some of the fletchings, put new wraps on it and slid them on and I was done. This literally took me like 15 minutes to do like 10 arrows. And I'm like, wow. I mean, that's another benefit to it. You know, it's if you like Eric, he was having like the problems I had last year. You do a helical or like an offset. If your vein goes on the edge of the wrap, it'll just peel up, you know, and then your arrow's toast. You know, with the Zingers, you're never going to run into that problem. So there's some perks to it. I mean, like I was talking to you up there, the only downfall would be is people know it's you. You know, if they see me at the truck, you know, with that, those things on my bow, you know, on a trail camera, they know it's me. So I think that's the only downfall that I see. Performance wise, I don't see a downfall, you know, but aesthetic wise, I think they look pretty cool, you know, and they're easy to find. They're easy to track in the far shots. So I'm going to, you know, run them on a hunting bow this year, one of my bows anyway. You know, I did a small four blade before I left and, you know, 50, 60 yards, it shot right where the fletchings do. So I, pretty impressed actually.
Well,
they show up really good in the target.
Yeah. Really. It's like, when I shoot here at the house, you know, it's kind of like in the dark and targets in the dark. So it is nice knowing I don't need to use my binos to see, you know, where I am on my target, which is nice.
Well, I like just like you were shooting them. And like it was easy to see like your arrow. So it's like, okay, well, I'm gonna shoot that. But one thing Greg had is he had wraps on his and they were like bright colors. So his arrows were like sticking out. And I think back to like the old school days and now I think like the issue that I have with like wraps and stuff like that is exactly what you're saying. Like if you mess up a fletching or like you do something, then you got to scrape them off. Then you got to scrape off the wrap. Then you got to redo the wrap. Like I think about, and we talked about this from like a bunch of different angles, over the weekend, but like the old like game getters and like the, you know, double X75s and like how many guys just had them like spray painted, like this spray painted the back of them with like,
yeah, the old cresting. I mean, people, that was one of the things that they used to do is they'd spin them and crest them, and then they'd just paint it, you know.
Yeah.
My neighborhood was white Krylon.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I wish I had, like, I guess he's got a different version, one with a less helical on it. I was looking at it, not so aggressive, because, or one way even more aggressive when I had on, I don't know, I was looking at it on the website there. He's got a different version. Cause I got the twos, the 2.0s, second gens. And there's two, I think he has two models, I guess. Is that right? Is that correct?
Yeah. There's like a 1 degree, a 3 degree. And then I think there's a 6 degree.
Yeah. Like I don't know which ones I got. I got, because I shoot up probably like a, it's almost a helical, but like my ones, like it's almost a 3 degree, like offset, you know, it's pretty much borderline helical at that point, you know, but it's a short vein, you know, so you don't really see the helical on it. And when I was at the show, he asked me what I shot and that's what he gave me. So I don't know. I'm assuming it's the helical one. I just don't know. I don't even have the box anymore. But I'd like to try a couple other ones just to see if there's a difference in broadhead like performance. Because if you have, those arrows are well tuned for that bow, so it doesn't take much drag to steer that arrow. It's just once you start putting, you know, the bigger broadheads on, that's what I want to get, you know, do some more testing with those things. You know, yeah. From a hunting standpoint, like I might shoot them 80 yards, but I'm not going to base my, but I'm going to shoot them at 80 yards. I don't shoot well enough broadhead to 80 yards to say, hey, these vanes shoot better. At 80 yards, if I'm not shooting where I want it, I'm not going to blame the vanes. It's me.
Yeah. Well, that was one of the things is like, watching the cool thing, and not about zingers or anything really in particular, but like when you're in the binos, like watching these shots at like 70, 80, 100 yards, like you're watching the arrow and it like comes off the bow, like, but you can see it like finally start tracking. Like that to me is like just super cool. And especially some of those, like, you know, other guys that have better camera equipment are watching those like slow motion shots, like of those arrows, like out there, like that's just super cool. And like you said, you just don't get to do that all over. I mean, we're fortunate. Our club has a, you know, even our field course has like an 80 yard shot on it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Like I do a lot of shooting too. Like those events by myself anymore. Like nobody I know shoots anymore. They're the 2 weeks for the season. Let me call Greg because my bow's not shooting good. So it's like I spend a lot of time just in my yard, and I don't really travel anywhere. Like my club started doing some 3D shoots. So most of my shooting is done by myself. So it's always nice shooting with a group of people. You know, it's just, it makes it fun and less, because when I'm by myself, like I get really competitive and serious. Sometimes it's not fun. You know, and it's like I'm there to train. Like it's like serious. So sometimes I put so much pressure on myself to, you know, like you were saying earlier, if I'm outside the X an inch, you know, or, you know, a quarter inch, it's still outside the X to me personally. Cause like, if you're competing, well, that's the difference between first and last place. Basically, you know, those shots, those certain targets, like you need to get that X and I don't get them. I'm like, it's just, I think it'll always bother me just cause what I went through for a decade, you know, I think that always like hit me in a certain way. Like, kill shot, but it's like I should have got that X, you know. It's like, because I always want that clean break, you know, good mental where you can bet, you know, watch, you know, the arrow's going to hit there, everything breaks, like the wall-off home run. Like, I like getting that rhythm where you just shoot and it breaks. You're like, I know it's in there. You know, like, I don't get those moments that often anymore. And like, that's one thing I do miss about shooting a lot, you know.
So with that, like, sort of mindset, and it's funny when I talked to Brent Woodward, he was at the cookout the other day. But like talking with him, like, it's always like super competitive. And one of the things you said when you're shooting is like, you like shoot. It's true. Cause like as humans, we just kind of move that way, but you're going to like shoot up or shoot down the level of your competition or like the people that you're shooting with. Like, is that like kind of like the content versus like the fun thing? Like, is that a good enough consolation for you to like shoot with us? Or you're like, well, Jake and John shoot good, and you know, yeah, Frank and Adam shoot like shit. So it's like, it balances out.
Thank you. You know, like if I were to actually like, cause last year I said, I'm going to shoot my bow more often, and 3 weeks for tack, I started shooting my bow this year. So it's like, I'm in the same boat as I was last year. Like, I need to make a conscious effort, you know, because I know if I were to start shooting, you know, to like, I know how John would ramp his shooting up and Jay would ramp his shooting up, just because this is human nature. You know, it's like, anybody that's competitive is like, oh, okay, now we're serious. Like, we're going to take it serious. And you will probably, you know, step your game up a little bit, you know, just because, well, if you want to get better, you need to shoot around better people, you know? So it's like, I do miss shooting like really well, but those events, like even my coach said when I was competing, shooting those things, he's like, it's a fun shoot. It's okay to shoot an 8. It's okay to shoot a 5. It's okay to miss a target. This is fun. You're not competing. This is a break from the training. This is a break from discipline. Go have fun. Yeah, I can't. You know, I was still like in that mindset because like I just wanted to, like, it's got to be like perfect all the time.
And I think that may be like a good analogy with the content stuff, because you were saying like you don't want to be like have this cameraman be like, okay, we're gonna watch Greg right now, and then you shoot like a 8. You know, it's like,
well, that's what D-Rock was saying. He filmed those guys. He's like, man, it's gonna be great. It's gonna be like, you know, bloopers. And he pulled out the camera. Well, everybody stepped the game up. And he was like, it really wasn't any fun because everybody's hitting the targets. There was nobody, there was no ribbing. Like, everyone was hitting foam. You know, even the guys that weren't shooting well. But it's like, he broke out the camera and instantaneously everybody was like, oh, you know, I gotta ramp it up a little bit.
I'd love to see like what Joe's video looks like, because it was like he wasn't even there. Like,
yeah, like, and that's good cameraman, you know, when you can just be yourself. There's no like expectations, you know, and it'll be cool to see, you know, D-Rock's video and like Joe's video and like see the difference between the two.
Oh my God. It's going to be like parental advisory.
Yeah. Right. I'm going to be a little more professional one.
it's always fun. And like, I really appreciate you coming like over here to shoot like with us, because I know, like, you know, Jake Bush called you and was like, hey, you got a freaking air mattress. He texted me like, are we staying with Latitude? Like, do I need an air mattress or something?
Yeah. I thought we got like a giant house or something together. I was like, I'm flying on a plane. How am I going to get an air mattress on a plane? You know, I'm like, this thing's coming in a big ass box. You know?
But like, you could come, if you were coming here, you know, you could have certainly been like, oh, I'm staying with the Latitude guys, or I'm going to go, like, you know, I wouldn't have wanted to stay like all the way in Manistee where those like Jake and D-Rock stayed. But like, it's always cool. Like, you're like, oh yeah, well, I'll come hang out with you guys. Like,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah, cause I don't want to like, so it's business, but it's also fun, you know, like, I'm there representing like Latitude, but also they allowed me the freedom and the flexibility to go up there and kind of just do my own thing, which is nice. You know, and it's like ATA in Harrisburg, you're a little more disciplined, you know, like I pretty much spend a lot of time in the booth, you know, so it'll go up there and work and then play. It's nice. Good change of pace.
I felt like we did at the ATA that I was at with you and the, and the Harrisburg. We did a fair amount of playing too.
Yeah. Oh, the, in the 8 to 4 we were working. No, not too much.
Yeah, no, we didn't spend a whole lot of time in the booth when we were 8. Of course, we built it.
Yeah. So we built it. Yep. We're gone.
Yep. We're in route.
Yeah.
But so I guess for guys who, I don't even want to say like, because everybody says, oh, I want to go to TAC or like, I want to do this, or it's something where I don't, and I think in our group, the trepidation was like, I can't shoot that far. And to be fair, I'm just going to say, you know, Greg did puss out on the moose. He said, I'm not shooting 142 yards or 143 yards. Yeah,
straight up.
But that's the thing is most people are like, well, I can't shoot that distance. And you're shooting a 50-pound bow with.
Through the Blackwater bayous and in the dark Louisiana night floats a duck camp, alive with the sounds of swamp pop and the smells of Cajun cooking. From the Mississippi Delta in Venice to the Cajun prairies of the Southwest, me and the Duck Camp Dinners crew will be hunting and eating it all.
This is Duck Camp Dinner.
Join me, Chef Jean-Paul Bourgeois, and the whole crew every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.
In Wild Country, rules were not created by man. Don't miss Wild Country, Wednesdays from 7 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Presented by Primos. Speak the language. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
You know, light arrows. And so what do you say to these guys who are like holding themselves back? Because honestly, it was really cool to shoot that. It sucked. It was only 15 targets, but that Rocky Mountain or the Ultra View course we shot on Sunday in the rain was a really cool. I mean, it was short. The longest shots were like 62 yards or something.
They were big targets.
Yeah.
Too, so,
but it was fun. Like that was a fun.
Well, that's real.
It wasn't long at all.
I mean, that around here, that's like a normal 3D shoot. But that, go to PA or whatever, like it's. You know, rolling hills, you got up and down, you got some side hill, like you got some footing that's not the best. And they just put the targets in a nice spot where there's not so much carnage in the way. Like if you do flank it, you're going to lose an arrow, but kind of makes you focus a little bit. You know, and it was cool. Like I said, I would like to see some more, like in that overgrown that clear cut, some maybe a bear feeding, you know, or like another deer, or maybe even throw an elk in there or something. You know, that would really brought that course of life. You're down in the swamp. You had the goat in the swamp, which is pretty rad. You know, and the frogs in the water, like it's pretty realistic. But if they could have threw a few more big game animals in there, I think it would have been, you know, a course that would have been a lot more people to went to. And it's a course that, you know, older gentlemen, you know, or women, ladies, kids can walk. Because the knock on course and somebody's like the primes, I mean, that's a challenging, like it's a physically demanding course. Just to shoot it, you know. It's like I think TAC would do well if they set up a few more smaller courses, you know, like Ultra View, but make it 20 targets, you know, make it out to 60 yards, like nothing crazy shot, just easy, relatively easy walking, you know, and maybe even have like a course for older people, you know, like handicapped or you know, people with like some type of walking disabilities. That'd be nice to see at those events. Because there's a lot more old people there this year. Like, and I say old, I'm not saying like 50 or 60. Those are, seeing a few people probably pushing upper 70s. And those a guy at the practice range. He was only shooting 20 or 30 yards at the practice range, you know. But he was old, man. He was like, he shoot 3 hours and that was it, you know. He had to wait for him to go. Like, him getting this three hours, it took, you know, it took everything he had. But it's cool to see that the older generation still shooting these bows. It's nice.
I think the black rifle, the first one we shot in the morning, the black rifle, that one was really flat. But then they put you through some shit that was literally like.
You had to crawl over a brush pile, like just to get to the next target, like not shooting through it or nothing.
Like, yeah. You could have just made it so you walked around it. Like, so that would have been like a good course for like Frank, but then you get, then they just throw some stupid shit like that. And they're like, well, just like clear that out or something. So it's not, you know, you don't want someone breaking their ankle. I mean, you give them flat ground.
Like a kid standpoint, if you got to, you know, if I want to take my daughter to one of these places, you know, like she's not going to walk 8 miles shooting bows, you know, mentally she's not going to be there, you know, like, so it was nice to see like, you know, a kid's course, you know, or a course geared towards, you know, smaller or maybe older, you know, people that were just some type of, you know, busted up legs or even backs, you know, they don't have the ability to walk far or up and down. Because I mean, there's some flat spots for that Crystal Mountain, you know, so you don't need to put a lot of vert in there. You still have a challenging, fun shoot for people.
Right.
But most people are saying, like, I would say, like, even in our group, they would say, like, my bow won't shoot that far. Or, like, I can't shoot those distances. Or I only shoot this many pounds. My sight only goes to this. Like, what would you tell them about an event like this?
Step up. I mean, if you're going to shoot 80. I mean, that one day we were behind that. That group had that girl. She had 80 yards was her max. Well, she's shooting the longer stakes, you know, or she move up a little bit. You know, if you got to move up, move up. Nobody in your group is going to just, or a group behind her, they shouldn't, you know, get on somebody because, you know, they can't shoot 100 yards. They can shoot 75. Well, let them shoot from 75. Not that hard. You know, you're walking towards the target anyway. You're not like walking further by any means, you know. So just if you can shoot 75 yards, then take 80 yard shots. You know, hover a little bit, but just try it. You know, you might be something you enjoy.
That was that the Black Rifle course where we had the three guys in front of us that we let through? And the one guy was, his max was like 80 or something like that. Because the two guys would shoot, and he would walk up and shoot.
Yep. Yeah, he was, because we shot that, the mountain goat, and we're like, that's a big-ass target. Like, he got plenty, but he still went up 20 yards further. But still, just do that.
Yeah.
You know, it's still, you can still shoot with your friends and experience something. And who knows, you know, it might be something you have a passion for. You know, you don't need to shoot 120 yards to be cool. 80 yards is fine. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, like 100 yards. I mean, I have a 96 yard pin on my bow. You know, and I shoot 100, I'm hovering over anything over that. Like, I'm definitely hovering over. Just let it eat, man. Have some fun.
I think that's the thing that you got to remember is that it isn't supposed to be a competition or like whatever. Like they gave us a scorecard, but nobody ever pulled it out or like was like, "Oh, what'd you get on there?" Like, oh, you know,
that one group on Knuckle, we went up Friday in the afternoon. Just people in front were keeping score. I mean, in the first target, they all missed, and they're like, "The guy breaks out the scorecard." I was like, what are you writing down there, buddy? Like, I don't know. Like, and it's like, they weren't even, you know, some of those guys weren't even shooting that well. Like, they even weren't on a scorecard. You know, like, for me, I would never want to keep scoring that. Unless, like, there was, like, money involved. There was, like, a competition type, like, some type of friendly competition. I don't see a sense of it. You know, unrealistic expectations. Because, you know, you see the people that'll make these videos for social media and they're, the editing all makes them look like they're smoking the 10 and the X ring that all exist distances. Guaranteed they're not. Very few people outside of a professional level can go on that course, you know, and 10 ring 90% of those targets. You know, people that are getting paid to shoot a bow.
I felt like that same course, there was some people in front of that group that were just slowing everything down, and we were shooting arrow after arrow after arrow. We just kept on shooting until the next group would come up on us. And like when we were at the water station, I stopped them and I went back and I was like, hey, you know, there's a group two in front of us that's, you know, not, they're holding everybody up. Like, I'm sorry. We're just, you know, having fun shooting a bunch of arrows. I know where there's a ton of us. Like, I hope we're not like holding you up or anything. And he just looked at me with like wide eyes and he's like, you guys are flying. For a group of 10 guys. And it's so cool. Like, he's like, because on that first target on Knock On, there, we already let people go through. There was a group coming up behind us, and we're like, as soon as they cleared it, like they were in there looking for arrows and farting around and all that stuff, and it was wide open, and we just got online, and we were like, all right, who's in the binos? And we just like sparted them down there, and like everybody hit the target. I mean, it was like, and we're like, all right, let's go. And they were like, oh my God. Like, these guys are serious.
I didn't want to let them in front. I was like, oh, we've already let people in front. They can wait like the rest of us. You know, like, right. There's nowhere to go. Like, we're maxed out here. Them jumping in line in front of us, they're not getting anywhere. You know, so it's like, they can just wait. And like I said, we shoot, we know the deal. You know, like, anybody that's never shot TAC or that shoots TAC or shoot group people, be courteous and be speedy. You know, if you got 10 people, two or three people shoot at the same time, you know, glass and one or two people range, and everybody get their stuff ready. Get up that stake, shoot, next guy shoot, next girl shoot, whatever it might be.
Yeah. And the range doesn't change from the first shooter to the last shooter. So it's not like you need to range it. You need to like check the wind. You like, no, like you shoot six targets with the guy that's ranging, and you say, okay, well, I need to add a yard or right. take a yard off. Like,
there's usually two guys ranging, and it's like we were a yard apart, and so everyone can just adjust, like, okay, well, I'm gonna go with Jake's or I'm gonna go with John's.
Yeah, I give mine a yard and a half, like, as farther we got out, I gave it two, and that was it, you know. But so next year, can we pencil you in? Are you gonna be there?
Yeah.
Did you say it was your daughter's birthday?
Yeah.
So you just like, yeah, busy.
Oh, we celebrated the week before, you know, and then the night before, you know, I left, you know, we did a birthday cake and everything. Like I always tell my daughter, like, she's just turned five, but I was like, you don't need a day to be special. You know, it's just another day, you know, every day daddy loves you. You don't get special treatment just because it's your birthday. You know, I want her to just realize, like, she doesn't need a Christmas or a holiday or birthday to, you know, get gifts or extra attention, you know. And I probably got maybe another year of not being here for her birthday, but it'll probably come to a point where she's like, Daddy, you're not leaving, right? I'm like, right. Hey, we're on Michigan. Let's go. Get in the car. Let's go.
I'm taking you to this place. They got a water park. They got a pool. Like,
yeah. It's like, I look at like situations like the Michigan one. Like, it's the end of school. I could probably drive up there. I think it's like 11 hours, but I could probably make a vacation out of it. You know, spend 5 days. You know, I might only shoot two of the days. You know, but at least bring them up, you know, because Annette likes that stuff. My wife's, she acts like she likes it. I don't know if she does or not, but she just entertains me like she likes it. My stepdaughter, like, it's hit or miss. Depends on the day, you know, depends on which way the wind's blowing. But I could probably make it a family event.
All right. Well, we'll make sure we got a house big enough for, what, 15 guys next time? Just keep getting bigger every year.
The house that was across from where we were, right on the corner, like, that house is nice.
Yeah, nobody was there either.
It was empty.
Yeah.
Except for the two cats in the yard.
Yeah. Cats are fat, dude.
But, yeah, so was there anything else from the weekend that, like, kind of stuck out for you?
The amount of – it's a lot more – it was busier this year. It's definitely a lot more foot traffic in the booth. You know, they sold a lot of saddles up there, a lot of gear. And people were itching to buy, you know, that last day there, like Sunday, me and Jake and Bush there, we were knocking them out of the park. Seems like it was like, and they're getting in it and it's like, they're buying. It's like, oh, this is easiest sales we have ever made, you know, but it was a lot more different vendors, which is nice. Like I said, I remember first couple of tacks, they had like two or three vendors. Like, it was like nothing. You know, now you're seeing some bigger companies like get behind it. So it's nice. You know, that mountain does seem small, the whole event. You know, it seemed like that main hub is just, it's very crowded. you know. Like in the practice range, wasn't too bad. You know, I've seen worse. So it was pretty good. So I would like to see the stays of that mountain use two chairlifts to go up, you know, maybe like separate, knock on course on the other lift, you know, so everybody's not just choking up in that one lift. You know, might streamline things a little bit better.
Yeah, well, do they have plans of going back to Boyne?
I don't know. I would have to think that they did, but I think they like this venue for like the resources. And I don't know why, but I guess like the condos at Boyne are like really spread out. Like the ones we stay in are nice, but the ones are like way off the course. And like, I don't know what they have. Like what?
There's a whole village like that we first stayed on. I mean, then that's not that much farther than what we stayed just now. I mean, you walk right by it. Like that first year we walked right and we ended our course. We walked back out.
Thing, yeah.
But
yeah.
But the venue itself is like what you're saying. It's a lot more spread out in the main hub. So like there's a bigger practice range and especially now with the popularity of it. And, you know, like the other, there are 25 targets and it gets down to the end. It's like, well, I guess 20 wasn't bad, but it's like just getting in. I'm like, let's few more, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, but, I said it. There's some changes, it's harder and harder to get tickets. Like, well, you were wheeling and dealing there, Adam, to get tickets, right?
Yeah. Well,
calling in favors and dealing three or four phones, yeah. You know, like you're a sports agent and shit.
Well, it's just, I think they really treat you well and they really do like appreciate you. So they try to accommodate everybody. But yeah, it's like you have to be on in the minute. Like there just seems to be like some sort of that there has to be a better way for that. But
almost like you need like a lottery system. Like, all right, you get it, you get a lottery, luck of the draw, whatever it might be, you know, and like going out west, like you have a group, you all get the same group up to say 10 people that way. Cause a few years ago they had groups of four was like the max or five, like, well, dude, going up with six people, there's always like an odd man out. You're like, sorry, Bob, you're beat. You know, a group of 10 people. But if somebody draws, like then they all draw that same time. I mean, there's, like you said, there's gotta be a better system than just getting overwhelmed service. Because what if guys at work can't get on the phone? You know, if I'm like, I'm at work, it's prime time and you got to be on the phone. Well, I can't say, sorry, boss, I got to go, you know, get on the phone and my email, you know, like, no, I don't have that, you know, I don't have that luxury. And some guys that have been shooting, you know, you're working that day, you can't get on. So I don't think there's any good way to do it because somebody's going to get hosed at some point in time, you know?
I like the legit a lottery system. Like you got, you know, we've been doing it for 4 years. Like we got 4 points, you know?
Yeah. they have when I was going to the PA one, you have you get the first dibs. Well, I like to, you know, I don't mind shooting at 7 a.m. You know, and like we couldn't get to 7 a.m. So we're at the practice range. My buddy at the time, you know, he was 4 a.m. Like he's getting up working out doing all this stuff. So like we're at the practice range at 6 shooting. So we're going up to the lift and I asked the guy to get on. There's nobody at 7 o'clock. Like that lift's empty. Like there should be penalties. If you get to 7, it should be type scanned. If you don't show up at 7, well, then you lose that slot time. You're not allowed to bid on that slot time because, you know, nobody was going up 7. It's like, dude, we can go. Like there's nobody coming. Can we go up? No. You're like 9 o'clock. And it's like 9 o'clock is like the worst time. And that's when everybody's getting up there. It's like, we could already been done. Right. Two dudes, you know, it's like we can blast through, like no problem.
Or if they sent up like how many's in your group? Doesn't really matter. Send up one group for Sitka. Then, cause it takes however long the frickin' chairlift goes. So then you send up prime, then you send up knock-on, then you send up another Sitka. Instead of sending, like, we're going to send up 25 people for Sitka so that you all get up there at the exact same time and you all have to wait for one another.
Yeah.
It's like, you'd have been better off, like, doing that, like, on the course. But I think on the course, it all works itself out because you got people. And, you know, that's another benefit of shooting with 10 guys, right? It's like, you guys don't understand, but the rest of us do. Like, you got 10 guys looking for your arrow. So you're like, if 10 guys don't see it in the first, like, minute, like, we're out. Like, it's gone.
True.
Like, but you got 20 eyeballs, you know.
Yeah. And there needs to be some rules set in place. You know, you got a minute to look for your arrow. Like, reinforce that a couple times throughout the course. And, like, I mean, look at the knock on. There's people who are behind the target looking for the arrow. Like, nothing in front of the target. Like, maybe put a flag near there, like, you know, like, if you're going to be looking for your, like, do something so somebody knows, like, you're behind those targets.
Yeah.
Just the safety, you know, aspect of it. I don't know. Like, things like that might pay off, especially in a wood situation. Like, if you're 20 yards behind a target, somebody rolls up, it's fair game. And a lot of people miss up there. You know, some of these harder targets, like I'm surprised, like, there hasn't been an accident or two at one of these events.
Mm-hmm. Well, in some of those ones, like when right where we left Joe, right on the Sitka course, we're walking and like literally like that one target was shooting up, like kind of like at you just on the other side of the hill. So it was like, we all like started walking and we were like, we probably want to be over here and like make a big loop around.
Target, I think everybody's like shooting uphill. Like, I think it seems sketchy, but I don't know if any arrows would ever make it up that far. Maybe John's arrows, but you know, us mere mortals, no.
But so, what do you got going on this year? Like coming up for hunting?
Probably hit up Delaware. I know I might do something with the latitude guys, Illinois or Indiana or somewhere if the schedules line up. You know, like I have the third week of November off. 1, 2, 3. Yeah. And the first week, I got Halloween, but it's Halloween and my wife's birthday. So I'm not going anywhere that week. You know, I used to go to PA at Johnny's Cabin that week, but now when that's older, like I can't do that. So I'll probably just do Delaware, Jersey, and maybe something with the latitude guys. You know, I sold some weeks, you know, some hours back to UPS this year. I burned through some time, you know. Family sick, I was sick, you know. 2, 3, 4 days. It'd be nice to have an extra 4 days right now that I had when I was sick, you know. I would take off like middle of October, you know. That'd be great. I could probably shoot it here middle of October, but I'll be a weekend warrior for most parts of the season.
When does your season start?
Jersey is like right around September 10th or 11th, whatever that Saturday is. That time frame in Delaware, September 1st.
So you guys are still earning a buck?
Of course. It's earn a buck and you can shoot $5. So
brave anglers search for the one they call king, but who will take his throne? Tune in to Waypoint TV's Battle for Silver, Saturday, May 18th from 12 to 6 p.m. Eastern, presented by Abyss Battery. Waypoint TV.
All right.
Yes. I got a camp. We're going to camp down in Delaware and central Delaware there where we've been hunting. And I said Delaware outlaw trail camera. So that'll be interesting to see how that plays out with pressure this year. As far as out of state pressure, I think it's going to scare some people away. And some people might not even know about it. So it'll be interesting this year down there.
You'd be calling the CO on every trail camera you see.
Yep. Yep. I can't use them. No one can use them.
Here's a pin.
Yep. Rules are rules. I don't make the rules. But I was going to go down and put a bunch of cameras up too. Like I had 5 cameras I was going to deploy down there. And I'm like, well, I guess they're not going down there. So, all right. So I guess I'll just put them around here. I don't really do much summertime stuff here in Jersey as far as like scouting or trail cameras. I'll put things out, but you know that unless, you know, come August, July, people are throwing out their bait piles and getting all that stuff ready. So trying to get good intel of a consistent movement here in Jersey can be tough. It's more frustrating for me, so I don't really bother with it.
Well, if you end up having, the first weekend in October off, we got a hell of a deer camp out here where you can just come and not shoot anything or just shoot some does. So it'll be well worth your time.
Yeah, that's what Kevin and those guys, they're doing their one up there for opening week two. And I'm like, I don't have enough time this year. I do get next week vacation, so I'll have 7 weeks off next year. So it'll be nice.
That'll work. That'll work.
Not to brag or anything, but I'm 7 weeks off.
Well, I think we could wrap this up, Greg. Where can people follow along with you for more shooting tips and all that stuff? And that's a really nice hat. Where can people buy those?
There was this guy in Michigan that made a few up for me. You know, he's a real nice guy most of the time. You know? Yeah, he likes to drink, you know? He really does like to drink and party, so. He actually wouldn't take any money for it. So you gotta watch out for guys like that. There's always playing some type of angle. Not free in this world, so.
Oh, no, we just appreciate you.
Yeah, Adam built the hats. So you hit Adam up if you want one. He's your guy.
I'm just gonna have to buy the logo from you. License it. Like every hat you get $1.
Pay for your Michigan trip.
There you go. Yeah. Sell 1,000 hats. All right. $1,000.
Sold your soul.
Chris left his hat. I had to put it on there. He hit me up. He's like, yeah, did Jake have a hat? I was like, no. I gave him one of the mesh ones. He's like, oh, I thought that was Jake's hat. He sent my hat back. I was like, yeah. And then TJ, I thought I was going to give him a hat. And then like, we were like cleaning up the house and we're like gone. And it was like, and like, you could get to the airport mode. It was like, shit. I was like, yeah, send me your address. I'll send you one too. You know,
these hats are actually costing me money.
Well, I got to the airport. Like, I'm glad I was early because I got there super early and like, they got to ask you weight and weigh your bags because the plane's so small. Well, the plane in front of me, and the family comes in and the one, I guess, daughter or cousin or whatever, they're from like Alabama or somewhere, was outside like on the phone. Well, they go in and then the guy's like, all right, everybody, got some bad news. We're like 100 pounds overweight. Someone's got to stay here. And the whole family's like, and he's like, if somebody volunteers or it's the last person. And I'm sitting there just like on the couch, like, well, I'm glad I checked in because I'm number one, you know. But, somebody had the guy, he's like, I just live in Chicago, so I'll just stay. You know, I'll get on the next. And the guy's like, I can probably get you on the next flight. One of these. I'm like, probably. I was like, Chicago, like, that's a drive, you know, from Manistee. I mean, that's like a 5-hour drive, I think. And I'm like, probably. I'm like, no, I'm getting on that plane. Sorry. You know, it's like, wow, like first come, first serve. And I was like, when I checked in, literally, it was like, the guy's like, all right, what's your name? And then you go sit down and TSA opens, like you're at the mall, you got like a locked, you know, like a storefront. They open it up, they scan everything. You know, I got bag checked. They had to go through my bag. Like, you got something in here. I was like, yeah, I got this, and this. The lady's like so nice. You know, she's like, I don't want to mess your stuff up. It was all packed nice and neat. She's like, I'm looking for this. I look at it, I was like, that's a lacrosse ball. And the one guy in the back was like, we need to check it anyway. I was like, we are. Settle down. It's okay. You know? But it was like four people to check, like, eight people on a plane. And then go through and shut the doors and get out. And then you wait for a plane. I'm like, you guys got the best gig in town, man. Like, there's like four or five flights a day. And they're probably making, you know, quite a bit of money doing what they do. I was like, that's not too shabby here, man.
It's the same way when I flew out of Muskegon to to Montana. Same thing, like the TSA people walked in front of me. Like, yeah. They walked in. with their coffee, and all of a sudden it was the same. They're like, open it up. Yeah. Okay, come through.
Yeah.
Then they get done, close it up.
Yeah, and they were like, so one guy, they were like, I like to say funny stuff and break balls, but they were, it's not their cup of tea, obviously. They're all, I set the bag down next to where the table is, like, sir, the line starts here. And literally, meanwhile, like, we're like, it's like 2 feet where I was standing in the bag. He goes, the line starts here. And he points in front of the podium. I'm like, he's like, the line starts here. I'm like looking at him. I'm like, well, no. He goes, the line's like, oh, I got to get my bag. And then I put my bag down front. He takes my stuff. And I'm like, what? It's right here. Like, we're like, I can touch the table where I'm standing. And I'm like, all right, dude, what, you want to play? Cool. All right.
I really wish I would have got that trophy in your bag.
When they say you're going to check your bag, that's the first thing that popped in my head. I was like, oh, God, it's in there. I was like, it's so in there, stuffed somewhere. And I'm like,
that and the crown.
Yeah. I really thought it was in there. I was like, fucking motherfucker.
Well, who'd I tell? I told Frank, I'm like, man, we need to get that in his bag before he leaves. Like, imagine getting checked at TSA and we're like, what the?
Yeah. Literally, I shit you not. I was like, wow, this is really happening. I was like, these motherfuckers hid that in my bag. And I'm like, and I'm thinking to myself, like, well, this is awkward because there's like 8 people on a plane and 8 people. And it's like, I don't look like a normal mission. You're going on the fucking plane. So I'm like, this is going to be an odd flight. If I get on, all right, sweet.
Grandma switches her seat. Nana, that was falling asleep, switches her seat next to me, to be next to you.
Yeah, Gam's like, hey, big boy, no.
This guy knows how to party.
Yeah. Reminds me of my old husband, Harold.
Oh, man. All right, dude. I don't know.
Fun. Yeah, invite, and thanks for the hospitality and the hats.
Probably be like, what, ATA is next, next shindig. So,
January, what, middle of January?
Yep. Second week of January, I think. Missouri.
Missouri.
St. Louis, Missouri.
Really?
Is that a first?
Yep.
That's a poke.
We'll just have to fly, John.
That's
good. Break out the company credit card.
It's a good 12-hour, more than that, probably. Yeah. We drove down there and did a job 2 years ago.
Yeah, no thanks. No thanks.
I think I'm like 18 hours from Missouri.
Yeah, you can pick me up, Greg.
Yeah.
Adam's at the airport. You pick him up.
Manatee Airport.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. We'll wrap this up. This is a bow hunting fiend and no Facebook.
No.
Are you on TikTok yet? No. Just Instagram. Just the gram.
Just the gram.
And YouTube. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, man. Later.
These casts could be the bite. It's the most exciting fishing that I know, right here at Hawk's Cave.
Oh, that's awesome!
Experience the best saltwater fishing the world has to offer. Don't miss Thursdays with Saltwater Experience, brought to you by Golden Boat Lifts, every Thursday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
Join me, Chef Jean-Paul Bourgeois, and the whole crew here at Duck Camp Dinners every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV. Birds up in the sky.